This program is brought to you by Resonance FM. If you like what you hear, please support our work by making a donation at resonancefm.com/donate.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and ResonanceFM.com on the net. Today's program features an interview with an employee of Tait Enterprises who has recently been made redundant along with 312 colleagues. For the past few months, they have been demonstrating outside Tait Modern, which is where I'm situated today, Saturday the 19th of September. The main interview took place on Wednesday the 16th of September with the employee who prefers to remain anonymous. Between Wednesday and Saturday, the situation in the UK has become worse with more lockdowns looming. The bookshop where I work requires that people wear a mask on entering and use hand gel, no more than four customers at one time. Until recently, we asked customers to wear plastic gloves before browsing the books, a strategy we learned from Italy when the virus was sweeping through Bergamo. Last week, someone came in claiming to be allergic to hand gel. She said, "It's okay, I have a plastic glove on," brandishing her gloved left hand, so I said okay. She then wandered around with a bag over her left wrist and used her ungloved right hand to browse the books with. I pointed out the error of her ways, which caused her to storm out in a huff. Anyway, so today's show features the Tait Enterprises employee and their ongoing strike action. This program was edited by Dan Wilson, presently screened off in Bishop's Stortford. Dan was recently chased by the police for trespassing on an unfinished housing estate while searching for rocks and hollow flints. It's the 16th of September and I'm sitting in Marcus Campbell Art Books, actually in the window of the bookshop, where we can look over to Tait Modern, which is literally just across the way there. And I'm joined here by an employee of Tait Modern, or an ex-employee.
No, current employee.
You are a current
of Tait Modern Bookshop.
Right.
And I'm also a union rep for PCS Tait United. So we're a branch of PCS.
What is PCS?
It's the Public and Commercial Services Union.
Okay.
And so that's the union that represents our workers in my team in retail and in some other areas of Tate as well.
Okay. And how long have you been at the Tate?
I've been at Tate for about 3.5 years.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, and I'm actually a casual worker, just 0 hours, because over the past years I've worked this job at various times, you know, opposite my freelance kind of creative work.
Right. Which is what? What else do you do?
I work as a curator, film programmer, and a writer. So I do lots of different projects, but in a way, this has sort of been my day job, in a sense, because I can't make, you know, enough money just on these creative pursuits on their own, and so I've used the work at Tate to supplement my income, but also, in a lot of ways, really love it, too. I love my coworkers, and I like speaking with members of the public and, you know, talking about art at work and, you know, being part of the organization too.
Yeah. Yeah. Just as a matter of interest, just I remember there was an exhibition not so long ago in the Blavatnik building, which was all, the work was all done by employees of the Tate, wasn't it?
That's right. So we've actually now had two staff exhibitions called Inside Job, and they've been meant to showcase the art and the creative pursuits of the staff throughout not only Tate Modern but the four Tate museums throughout the UK. So actually those exhibitions were really great because we don't have a lot of opportunities to connect with people not only like outside of our department but you know, in the other museums and stuff like that. So it was really great to meet a lot of people through that. I didn't have any work in it myself, okay, but a lot of my
do a lot of the employees have art activities are
yes,
the artists and
yes
so on?
I would say 90-95%
oh, really?
Of my team, the retail team,
are
either artists or curators, writers, dancers, actors, performers. You know, some of them work full-time and do their practice like outside of that. A lot of them work part-time or casual.
So that's probably quite good for the morale of the work. I mean, to be involved in such a place.
Yeah, so that was something that actually my colleagues who set up the Inside Job exhibition like lobbied the museum for, and the museum was happy to support. It was the same really as any other exhibition, you know, listed on the website and that visitors could visit during museum hours and things like that. Yeah.
Okay.
So in some, but basically in some ways, Tate is very happy to show off the talents of its staff, but in other ways, yeah, some members of staff can feel like a bit interchangeable or, well, the campaign that we're going through right now, yeah,
okay,
makes us feel that way.
How long have you been a union rep?
It's very recent, actually. It's only been since this campaign started a couple months ago. Because of all of the organization involved and because personally of the amount that I was putting into it, I was sort of elected as a union rep to join the group of a few union reps that already were serving.
Right.
And yeah.
So listen, so when did this dispute start?
So in I believe July at this point, maybe about 2 months ago, we were called into a meeting, we being actually the staff of Tate Enterprises, which to explain is a commercial subsidiary of Tate Gallery. So Tate Gallery is a non-profit institution, and they set up a limited company called Tate Enterprises, which kind of that's what all the profit-making activities fall under. So retail, catering, publishing, things like facilities rental for events and things like that, image licensing. So basically, we as Tate Enterprises employees were called into a meeting and told Tate's been waiting for an arts and culture bailout from the government that hasn't come, and because it hasn't come, and because of, you know, our projected decrease in attendance, we have to start a consultation for redundancies. And this is mandated by law to be a 45-day consultation because of the number of redundancies is over 100.
That seems to me, that sounds like very quick, given the fact that the lockdown only started in what, March?
Yeah.
And then by what date? When did they give you this?
I think maybe the 15th of July or something.
July.
Like this.
So it was like 3 months. Within 3 months.
When they sort of announced that this was meant to happen.
Right.
And then...
Because you would still have been on furlough until October.
That's right.
Can I just interject? There's 313 people have apparently been made redundant. I spoke to somebody else briefly, and she said that a lot of them were employed by something called Serco, or some subsidiary, almost some subcontracted division. Like, you're not, are the other 313 all employees of the Tate?
That's right. Okay. So basically, Tate contracts out some staffing to Securitas, which is a multinational corporation. They're most known for providing staffing for for-profit prisons.
Right.
But Tate contracts out security work through Securitas, and also now gallery assistant, visitor assistant roles, some of them are contracted out through Securitas.
Right.
None of the 313 people being made redundant are part of that.
So they're all employed by
Tate Enterprises, which again is a subsidiary of Tate.
Right, right. Yeah. But is Tate Enterprises run by the Tate, or is it just in name only?
So this is the thing. In some ways, we feel that when it's convenient for Tate Gallery to be the owner of Tate Enterprises, they speak about it one way. And when it's convenient for the company to be an independent company, they speak about it in another way. Basically, the whole model of Tate Enterprises is that we bring in as much profit as we can to the museum, because to go back some years, you know, successive Tory governments have said that art institutions need to raise more of their own profit rather than relying on government support.
Right.
So Tate Enterprises has been a well-oiled machine to really bring in millions of pounds of profit. So each year, Tate Enterprises brings in something like 2 million, 5 million, 7 million pounds. And all that profit, 100% of the profit at the end of the fiscal year, is passed over to Tate Gallery.
Right.
So the problem in a situation like this is that Tate Enterprises has no reserve. They have no money, you know, from previous years of profit, because that all goes to the Tate. But Tate say that they can't move money from Tate Gallery to Tate Enterprises back again.
Okay.
This, you know, when some people claim, you know, you guys are being made redundant, and this is happening all over retail at the high streets and things. No high street retailer would ever, at the end of a fiscal year, give away 100% of their profits to another company. So it's different, and it also ignores the knowledge that we have of the institution, you know, the lots of the ways that we interact with the visitors, you know, lots of the work that we do that is outside of just strictly, you know, becoming machines for transactions.
Right, right. Like. it stands at the moment, are the 313 people still employed and you're on strike, or have you been sacked?
Some people are still employed and within the notice period of their redundancy. So as far as I understand, everyone has by now been told whether they will be made redundant or be kept on. Some people didn't have a choice in a way because their positions were eliminated. And again, these redundancies cut across retail, catering, and publishing. And in a way, they do affect people at different levels of the structure. So one of the...
So are the 313 people all on notice? They will all lose their jobs?
Yeah, some may have actually come to the end of their notice by now.
Oh, okay.
It's really difficult for us to keep track of the day-to-day, also because it's so many people.
Right.
And actually, our union membership is very low among... employees of Tate Eats, which is the catering.
To go on strike suggests that you, if my understanding, if someone goes on strike, it means that they are no longer working. In other words, they refuse to work.
So that's correct. Basically, to continue the story from before, so this 45-day consultation was carried out. And it was a chance for the union, in conversation with us, the members, to, in a way, negotiate some terms with Tate Enterprises. And so things came out through that. Like, we were successful in them not cutting any retail jobs at Tate St. Ives or Tate Liverpool. And there were some things about... the way that employees would be selected for redundancy or to be kept on, the way that people would be evaluated. And these type of things came out during this 45-day period. But basically, at some point, 2 or 3 weeks into that consultation, is when the government's £1.57 billion culture bailout was announced. And soon after, we learned that because of the sort of size and... function of the institution, Tate would receive £7 million of that government bailout. And so, in a way, we thought this was good news for our jobs. But then we heard very quickly that Tate would not invest £1 of that money into saving anyone's jobs. So at that point, that was the point where we decided it was important to escalate to a strike action. And so that's a process. First is a consultative ballot where members are balloted online whether they would like to hold the official ballot for strike action. That passed overwhelmingly with a 99% turnout. Then the second ballot, the statutory ballot to vote for strike action or not, that passed with something like 81% turnout and a high 70% vote for strike action.
Right.
And the minimum that's needed is 50%. So from that point, we had a period of, I think, 14 days where we had to notify Tate before we were able to start striking. And then the first strike day was Tuesday, the 18th of August.
So there was a period when, in theory, you should have gone into work to work out your redundancy period, but you're saying, no, we're not going to work anymore, we're striking now, we're not going to work.
Yeah, so some people did actually have to go into work, let's say, that starting, because the museum reopened the 27th of July. And our strike action started the 18th of August.
Right.
There were lots of strange things happening. Like, this whole restructure was done because the museum had said they didn't need so many people working, and then they called back everyone to the shop floor at the same time. And in terms of safety and in terms of just...
So were they... Did they... presumably need those people to wrap things up or whatever, to tidy up.
Yeah, I don't really know, because personally myself, I didn't work during those days as a casual employee, but it's just really strange course of action. But basically, since the 18th of August, we have been on strike, which means that we don't go into work and we don't tell our employer that we're not going, we don't have to tell our employer that we're not going into work. If we don't show up on a day that we are scheduled to work, the employer will assume that we're striking.
So are they paying you at the moment?
So anyone that is on strike is not able to be paid for their shifts because they're not working necessarily. So striking workers just miss out on that money. Now, luckily, our union, PCS, has a statutory amount of strike pay per day that people who miss a day of work will be able to get paid per day that they miss an amount of work.
Right.
Now, that's much lower than we'd actually like make for a day's work, but we do have a strike fund, take home or strike fund, that is run through GoFundMe. And at this point now we have about £16,000 of donations.
Okay.
And this can be used to top up people's payments up to where they need in terms of, you know, going up to what they would make.
So how many people are still working in the Tate now, roughly?
Well, to be clear, again, we're just the retail employees that are on strike. Actually, none of the other employees, like visitor assistants or ticketing or people like this, are actually legally allowed to go on strike.
Mm-hmm.
Out of our team of, I would say maybe about 120 at Tate Modern and Tate Britain, I would estimate that 100 people are striking.
Out of
about 120. Out of the retail staff. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
but then the permanent, the other staff who aren't part of Tate Enterprises.
Yeah, they're all working.
They're all working. Was that how many hundreds of people would that be?
Oh, I mean, quite a lot.
So I see. Okay.
So within Tate Enterprises, you know, before these redundancies, there were 640. Staff within that organization. Now, some people work in offices and other things, and not everyone is.
So some people within Tate Enterprises are still working?
There are some employees who have not joined the strike, but it's a very small minority.
Right.
Yeah.
And so what is your strategy, you know, when you sort of, obviously you've been demonstrating outside the Tate, on and off, probably twice a week, maybe down Tate Britain as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Quite sizable demonstrations with placards and music and all sorts of things going on across outside. Are you appealing to people to not go into the Tate, or are you trying to get other employees to join your strike, or all of these things? Or?
So we have basically three main things that we do within our strike campaign. The first is to strike, which again just means don't go into work. So that can mean just staying at home or whatever, just not going into work. The second is picketing, which is when we stand outside of the staff entrance here at Tate Modern and at Tate Britain, and we ask our employees in retail to join the strike, to stand with us and to not cross the picket line. They can obviously make their own choice on that, what they want to do, and we don't act, you know, aggressively or mean to anyone. We're full of kindness. And then the third is protests. So strikes, pickets, and protests. And the protests are the actions where we invite the public to protest with us outside of the museums or in different ways.
Right.
Yeah.
That side of it seems to be quite successful, I think.
Yeah, so basically,
I mean, the last point.
The
protests have been quite vocal.
It's the most visible part of the process, but the other two parts are important too. But basically, we do not ask people to boycott the museum. We do not keep people from going into the museum, but we are there to raise awareness about our situation and people, you know, can make their own decisions from that. We have a lot of support among members from the museum, you know, some of whom are very vocal to the institution and their displeasure about the situation.
Are you negotiating with the is it ongoing, the negotiations, or is it pretty much a standoff now?
There are negotiations, and I can't speak about the details of those, but that's something that's ongoing, and basically that is, you know, our goal. We want the union to be able to negotiate with the museum to save as many jobs as possible.
Right.
So basically we have three clear key demands. The first is that no one should be made redundant while any Tate employee is paid over £100,000. The second is that...
how many are paid over that?
I don't have an exact number, but some of the senior managers are paid £100,000 or...
Do you have an approximate idea? We're talking 10 people, 100 people?
Some more in the realm of 10 people.
Okay.
Yeah. And the second demand is that 10% of the £7 million government culture bailout that Tate is getting, 10% of that should be used to save as many jobs as possible. It's just a very small portion of it. The third demand is that if the money Tate's getting from the government isn't enough, they should join our union and PCS to lobby the government for more support. Tate haven't been willing to meet any of these three quite reasonable demands, which is why we're now in the fifth week of our strike action.
See the future. I mean, what do you think is going to happen here?
Well, basically, we've been really successful so far, and actually, like, we're really tired. We're very stressed, and the future is uncertain. But we're really inspired by the support that we have been getting from so many people, by the unity that we feel working together, and by, you know, actually the effectiveness that we feel our action is. Taking on. So
you had Owen Jones here, didn't you, a couple of times?
Yeah, so we've had Owen Jones speak in our support. We've had Ash Sarkar from Novara Media. We've had Jeremy Corbyn come and give a speech in support of our strike action, and lots of artists like Mark Leckie, like The White Pube. We've had lots of statements of support that we post online from various artists like Anish Kapoor, Hannah Starkey, and from trade unionists as well.
Right.
Actually, one of the most spectacular things is, you know, we get contacted by other groups of art museum workers who say that they're like quite inspired by what we're doing to kind of hold their own institutions to account, standing up to the things within museums that need to be stood up to. So,
Is this a unique situation, or are there other museums and institutions around the world who are kind of in a similar predicament?
Speaking locally in the UK, we feel like we're the first ones that this is happening to. We're the first group of art museum workers to be kind of made redundant in such a large number and in a cut that is way too deep. And that's why we're so committed to fighting this, because it's happening elsewhere. our colleagues at the South Bank Center are a couple weeks behind us in terms of the same kind of thing. The National Theater are also laying off about 400 front of house employees. The MAC, the Midlands Arts Center in Birmingham, have laid off 41 staffers, and in total probably about 200 people. They've been told that there's no work for them.
Do you think has there been enough kind of media interest or coverage of these situations, do you think? Is anyone taking any notice?
There has been some. We've been lucky to have a good amount of coverage through a lot of different outlets like Dazed, like Freeze, Novara Media. We were on the front page of The Guardian yesterday, who were reporting the open letter that over 300 artists signed in support of our strike action, including many Turner Prize winners and Tate Collection artists. So the news is getting out there, but it's the challenge is sustaining it, you know, over such a long time. Yeah. So we're continually trying to think of new ways to organize ourselves to get our story out there. One of the most effective things that we were able to get out there 2 weekends ago, we published a comic strip by a London-based artist called Bethany Hall. And she made this 9-page comic called Why Tate Staff Are Striking. And in a way, it condensed our campaign down into something that was visual, into something that like had the sort of information there but was really easy to understand. And we got like 4,000 likes on Instagram of this, and you know, it's been circulated quite widely. And so we're trying to think of different ways to get the information out, but it's, as we're speaking right now, I'm sure you can tell it's quite a complicated situation. It's it's a bit hard to explain in just a few words. So,
but ideally, you would like to be reinstated. You'd like to go back to work, or is that going to happen? Do you think? Can it happen?
Speaking personally for myself, I would like a resolution that saves as many jobs as possible. I don't know what that means in terms of a number. But, you know, I think the amount of job losses is way too deep when there are a lot of alternatives that haven't been properly explored by the museum. There have been a lot of ideas that we've put forth to Tate Enterprises about different ways to adapt the business to this time, about ways to redeploy us into other departments, because we already have the knowledge of the institution, about new ways to bring in, to bring in profit in terms of shop visit only tickets, because now tickets, pre-booked tickets, are required to go into the museum. We've had all of these ideas, but they haven't really been listened to.
Well, I was going to say, that was my next question. Do you get a feeling that they, the author, whoever they are, are taking a hard line about this? Do you think they're not really going to give way, and that they're determined to for the situation to remain like this? So the 313 have gone, and that's the end of it for them. Or do you think they actually, is there some degree of sympathy? Do they want you back? Do you think it's financially impossible?
We've been called in an interview by the director of Tate, friends and colleagues, and they continually say that, you know, they're saddened by this action, but it's what's necessary for the survival of the institution. They're not actually saving that much money by getting rid of us, because we're, again, the lowest paid employees in the institution, and we are also workers in the most diverse teams in the institution.
And presumably further down the line, you would imagine that, like, the middle of next year or something, they would want people back, weren't they? They're going to want people to get the thing going again.
This is the thing. So they're, they've already kind of outlined some ideas for rehiring people if jobs are able to come back again, but we don't really feel that that's the best strategy at this point. We want to keep people in employment. We want to keep people being paid as much as possible. If things are needed, like, we haven't really been asked if anyone would be willing to cut their hours to split things in some way with other people. I mean, that wouldn't be a solution to save all of the jobs, but any things like this can add up to keeping some people on. It's just that, I've seen colleagues of mine who have worked at the museum for over a decade, colleagues of mine who have families to support, a lot of us, these are our friends that we work with. These are our support networks as well, we just feel like we're not being considered fairly, and so we don't want the lowest paid and most precarious workers to be the ones to shoulder all of the burden of the pandemic.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. You should remain nameless, or can we?
I think it's a good idea to remain nameless.
All right. And what can I just ask you? What this rep is, that some signal? Is that the union rep?
I'm
referring to a red sort of. What is that? A red.
It's an armband. Well, it's a bit of fabric, but we wear red armbands when we picket the staff entrances of the museum. Just so people understand that we're there protesting. Right. Yeah. I mean, they know who we are because we're their co-workers and everything, just for some visible reminder that we're striking.
This is Saturday, the 26th of September. I'm opposite Tate Modern today, and through the window of the bookshop here, I can see a small contingent of strikers outside Tate Modern. There's a few banners, a lot of stuff on the ground with messages and so on. There's 30 to 40 people out there, part of this ongoing strike action against the 313 redundancies. In the meantime, since last interviewing the employee, I've received a message from the Tate management, which I should read out to balance the report. And this is, they start by saying, "I'm afraid there is no one that would be appropriate to interview at the moment. But please see the below webpage, which has all the relevant information about this." And then there is a link to tate.org.uk about us, impact COVID-19 on Tate. And the link takes you to the impact of COVID-19 on Tate. And then below that, the statement. The restructure of Tate Enterprises Limited, and then in brackets, to be attributed to Hamish Anderson and Carmel Allen, directors of Tate Enterprises Limited. Close brackets. Tate Enterprises Limited, Tate's commercial subsidiary, has had to make the difficult decision that many businesses in the hospitality and retail sectors now face to restructure its business because of the impact of the pandemic. We have been supported by Tate Gallery with an allocation of £5 million from their reserves. However, this funding cannot meet the gap in income due to heavily reduced visitor numbers in the galleries. We have worked hard and exhaustively to model as optimistically as we can for the future and to keep as many jobs as possible. We regret that, following collective consultation,
we are having to make 313 redundancies in Tate Enterprises Limited. It is with great sadness that we have been forced by the current circumstances to have to make these decisions. We recognise how difficult this is for our colleagues and aim to be as supportive as we can while still ensuring the future of the business. So that is a statement from Tate Enterprises Limited. And that is sort of in balance to the interview with an employee of Tate Enterprises who is presently on strike. And as I look across the Tate, I think I can see him, although he's wearing a mask, so it's difficult to identify him. And there's also a green banner from something called the, looks like Tower Hamlets Green Party, and various other denominations. All right.
Heather Phillipson, you can currently see her work on the fourth plinth in Trafalgar Square, and she's the commission for Tate Britain in 2021. She says, right now, Tate's integrity is in the dock. Its most vulnerable and diverse workers have been put in plight. This is the time of all times for Tate to say no to the lowest paid paying the highest price. True radicalness happens when those with power use it to support those without. And compassion is always the most radical act of all. Tate, don't justify these cuts so valiantly. Don't look on coolly while people suffer. If the system doesn't work for everyone, dismantle the system decisively, rehabilitate it. In solidarity, Heather Phillips. We wholeheartedly stand in solidarity with Tate United. Every member of staff should be cared and accounted for during a pandemic and always. Dividing the workforce into those that will be supported and those that won't is inherently discriminatory. Prioritize saving jobs. Prioritize the survival of those who are the most vulnerable. Prioritize care. Share the resources that have been made available. Edward Thomason and Lucy Beach. Would like to express her solidarity to the picket line. 313 lost jobs of those that are the lowest paid and most at risk during this pandemic, and maybe even worse, suffering in the aftermath. Pulling any security away when things are so insecure and unknown is shameful. There shouldn't have to be a GoFundMe page. I was part of an event called Social Justice last summer as part of Tate Late. The irony is as subtle as a brick. With very best wishes, Frances McGurn. Maybe read two more and continue some of those later. So from Sunil Gupta, artist, writer, and curator. He says, as an artist with work in the Tate Collection, I'm writing in support of your strike. I am not surprised that this institution is behaving in this way. It needs to be reminded that it can't get away with this without losing an enormous amount of goodwill. Signed, Sunil Gupta, in solidarity. The last one for now. Full support for the Tate workers. Management always sack the lowest paid and the most vulnerable. Shame on them in solidarity with those who face losing their jobs and despite in desperate poverty, as a result. My warmest good wishes to the Tate workers. Well done for keeping up the fight, Ken Loach, filmmaker. So the plan is at 1 p.m. we have Glam Tifa DJs who will be playing some revolutionary dance music. Around 2 or 2:15, we will have Owen Jones and Ash Sarkar to say some words. At 3 p.m. we'll have a short performance by singer-songwriter Tina Grace, and all throughout there we'll be making our voices heard.
And we need to remember why we're in this mess. Because, of course, the way they present it is we're in this terrible global pandemic. And they had to struggle and do the best they possibly could. And, of course, mistakes were made here and there. But they, how could anyone have known this would happen? And do you know what? It's bollocks. And this is why it's bollocks. We knew what was happening. We saw what happened in China. We saw people dying on ventilators in northern Italy. We knew that this was a deadly virus, and this government decided that we were going to have so-called herd immunity and let the virus rip through society. If they had locked down just 3 days earlier, they believed that 10,000 lives would have been saved. But the knock-on effect isn't just a human catastrophe, which is just on excess deaths. One in every 1,000 of our fellow citizens died in this pandemic in 2.5 months. It's not just like human costs. Because they cause such a disaster in terms of public health, it means the economic and the social disaster are even worse because the lockdown was extended and confidence doesn't return. This crisis is on them. And don't let them forget it. And that's what they're doing. There's a book which had a big impact on me, and it was a book called The Shock Doctrine by Naomi Klein. And it is about how those ruling elites use disasters and crises to their own advantage. And it charts across the world wars and natural disasters, how it's used the aftermath to privatise and to roll back rights and protections and security and to sack people and shift society even more in favour of those at the top. And we can't let them do that all over again in this country. No coronavirus shock doctrine from this Conservative government. And this is why this struggle is so important to wrap up. This is why it's so important. And I always say this because it's true. It's the eternal truth of how social change happens. It doesn't happen by just sitting around hoping for the generosity and the charity of the powerful, sitting around singing Kumbaya and writing petitions to powerful people. That's not how we get change. We have to struggle and we have to fight. And all the rights and all the freedoms won in this and in other countries were won by people not waiting for the generosity and charity of the powerful, but by struggling from below. That's how we won the welfare state. That's how we won the National Health Service. Women's rights, LGBTQ rights, and workers' rights. And that is what we have to do here. Because workers all over this country, we've seen what this crisis did. It revealed. We clapped the key workers week after week, undervalued and underpaid. We saw how the gig economy and the self-employed workers are always one payback away from poverty. We've seen how the welfare state is manifestly inadequate. We've seen how our social care services are funded. And it shows again what this crisis has done. It's revealed and exacerbated existing injustices. That the way workers win is fighting back. And we've seen it same fucking getting in as well. So keep fighting, keep organizing, have hope, have solidarity, yeah, and let's use this to encourage other workers to fight back and to win. Thank you.
Okay, I'll speak to you later.
Ah,
This program has been brought to you by Resonance FM. If you like what you heard, please support our work by making a donation at resonancefm.com/donate.